Speaker, will be Clive Stafford Smith, who heads Reprove, one of the three organisations behind tonight's event. But before Clive speaks, I know he's going to speak about his client and who he recently visited, Shaka Armer, who's been mentioned several times tonight. Mirza mentioned earlier on that within these tragedies, there are the tragedies of all these families. And so before Clive speaks, I'm going to read to you a very short record of a letter and a conversation that I had with Shaka's wife more than 2 years ago. This is what she said. Once, a long time ago, my husband wrote this letter to me from Guantanamo. This is what it said. I am dying here every day, mentally and physically. This is happening to all of us. We have been ignored, locked up in the middle of the ocean for years. Rather than humiliate myself, having to beg for water, I would rather hurry up the process that's going to happen anyway. I would like to die quietly by myself. I was once 250 pounds, and I dropped to 150 pounds in the first hunger strike. I want to make it easy on everyone. I want no feeding, no forced tubes, no help, no intensive assisted feeding. And this is my legal right. The British government refuses to help me. What is the point of my wife being British? I thought Britain stood for justice, but they abandon us. People who have lived in Britain for years and who have British wives and children. I hold the British government responsible for my death, as I do the Americans. Shaka's wife went on to say, my own husband wrote this. Why don't they help him? Why have the others come back and not him? Can you tell me? Why can no one tell me? I can't believe my own husband wrote that letter about wanting to die. He's not like that. He's big and he's strong and he's talking and always talking to everyone, making friends with everyone. People always love him. You couldn't not love him. You know, I prayed when I went on the Hajj to let me marry a man in white robes and a scarf like those I saw. And my prayer was answered back home in Battersea. A young man from Medina came into the mosque and spoke to my mother. I liked him when I saw him, though I didn't think at first he was just too big. But he was too kind to me for me not to love him. You know, now I have dreams. I hear voices, bad voices in my head, and they tell me that he's dead or that he's divorced me. I try to tell them to go away, but they come back. Tell me they aren't true, are they? What's happening to me? Do you know, he's been away from me in Guantanamo longer than we were together, 8 years. My youngest boy, you never saw his dad. He doesn't even know what a dad is.
Thank you very much. And look, I apologise for running out a minute ago. I had to do a debate on the BBC with David Rifkin. I was in law school with him in New York many, many years ago, and he hasn't got any more sensible in the last 28 years, I'm telling you. And talking about folly, that's what Guantanamo Bay is all about, isn't it? It's the idea, when you go down there, that for every single prisoner, there are 17 soldiers to protect us from them. 17 for each one. And for every prisoner, we spend $800,000 a year. You know, just imagine how many schools you could have for that. And then, as Michael said, 89 of the 171 people have been cleared for release. And you know what Rifkin just said on the radio? He said, they've been cleared for release, but who knows what they'll do if we do release them, so we'd better just keep them. You know, what's the point of clearing people for release? And I did point out to him that all these vicious, dangerous people in there, and I'm looking at some of them, I'm sitting next to some of them. I don't think, and Mersin will correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think these horrendous criminals have had a traffic ticket since they came back to England. I may be wrong on that. If it's true, then I plead guilty to being vastly worse criminal than they are, because I'm afraid I did just the other day. And, you know, this is it's stunning. But what got me so angry in the very beginning of this was the sheer hypocrisy of it. When I first saw, and I'm American as well, I'm half British, so I get to apologize for everybody. But, you know, when I first saw that my country was saying we stand for the rule of law and democracy, and what are we going to do? We're going to set up a prison in Cuba, for goodness sake, which is a place we've said doesn't have any of that. And what we're going to do there is we're going to deny people any rule of law or anything. And then you go down there, and the first time I went down there in 2004 and met Mosen, you know, you see the motto of Guantanamo, and it says, honor bound to defend freedom. And, you know, I thought, wow, these people have got a sense of humor. And, you know, we were going, I've told the story, these guys know, but it just made me laugh so much. We went into McDonald's, and I had my mind there, this colonel, a very nice chap, because we were considered very dangerous. We were the lawyers. And I was told by one of the guards that they'd been told that we were the enemy. And so you had to have a minder everywhere you went. And I had this colonel, and we'd walk into McDonald's, and there's this junior soldier salutes him and says, honor bound, sir. And he salutes back and says, to defend freedom, soldier. And I laughed. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was for my benefit. And they weren't amused. And they thought I was being quite rude. And then we drive down to the camps, and they have a little sign as you drive down to the camps, and it says on the sign, the value of the weak. And it said, compassion. And this was the value of the folk who were just sort of holding Muslim in solitary confinement, you know, abusing my friend Sammy here. And there is no sense of reality in Guantanamo, no sense. And there's no common sense. And it's a nightmare, not just for everyone involved in it, but it's a nightmare for America too, isn't it? When I first went there, there was a CIA guy who said that he thought that for every prisoner we had held in Guantanamo, we had inspired 10 people to hate America so much they'd want to come and do us harm. That was in 2004. And I think there's probably a lot of truth to that. And yet, years later, how many more people have we inspired to hate us? And how much more dangerous has that whole place made us? So my good friend, and I think I use that slightly loosely, David Rifkin, speaking on behalf of the American government today, is saying that we want to keep it open forever because we need it to detain the evil people like sitting up here with me. I mean, it's just so sad and so wrong. But I did want to talk about Shaka because we have these anniversaries. And when I saw Shaka in November, you know, that was when he just had his 10th anniversary, actually, of first being detained in Afghanistan. It was on November the 24th. He was first detained by the Americans on Christmas Eve, on the 24th of December. He was detained in Bagram. And I think that's an important anniversary because Shaka was abused horribly in Bagram. He was one of the first five people to get there. And the things that happened to him were absolutely ghastly. And one thing I suspect we'll all hear tomorrow is the result of, you know, whether they're going to have criminal prosecutions for certain complicity by the British in some of those abuses. Well, look, Shakarama, there's no question but that there needs to be a full criminal investigation into what happened to him in Bagram. Then he went to Kandahar, and it wasn't until Valentine's Day of 2002 that he ended up in Guantanamo Bay. And that's a real anniversary in my mind, because I had a 3.5-year-old boy called Wilfred. And, you know, I was a bit of a late starter myself, my wife and I, and we're real amateurs. But, you know, as Michael said, you know, what greater joy is there? And if you're not very careful, I shall inflict pictures of Wilfred on you. If I only had a PowerPoint, I'd be showing them right now. And that poor child is shown all over the world to people just because I'm obnoxious and proud of my little boy. It's been such an experience in 3.5 years. And you know that, and many of you are much wiser than I am on that. But the idea that on Valentine's Day 2002, Jack is banged up in Guantanamo, and that's the very day that his child is born, and he's never seen his child in 10 years. The idea of my having missed 3.5 years of Wilfred. Just compare that to Shaka and 10 years of his child. It's just so sad. And at the same time, everyone wants to say in America that Guantanamo is getting better. And I heard some chap on the radio, a doctor, who was unwilling to give his name. I suppose we're all a bit ashamed of being involved in this. And he was saying that the prisoners in Guantanamo Bay get as good medical care as he would have made sure his family got. Well, he ought to be struck off, frankly, because the quality of medical care, as these guys would tell you better than anyone, is unfathomably bad. And I have right here a bit of paper that's unclassified, because I had to go through the whole classification process, in which Shaka has listed 18 ways in which his body is falling apart. And he talks about the kidney pain he got from being beaten up, and he talks about his prostate, he talks about his eyesight going, and so on and so forth. And he talks about, for example, his fingernails. Well, I saw his fingernails, and I held them, in fact, and they were orange, and his fingernails were falling apart, and as I put my fingernail into his, you could actually crumble it. It was horrifying. And, this is clearly a bacteria that's destroying his fingers. And that's meant to be okay. I mean, that's the least of his worries, frankly, compared to all the other things he's going through. But the concept that it's okay and he's getting good health care merely re-emphasizes the fact that the Americans need an NHS. But then they go on to say the conditions are wonderful in Guantanamo Bay, too. And Shaka has now been in solitary isolation for, I think, probably longer than any other prisoner in Guantanamo. And he's now in Camp 5, Echo Block, which is their punishment area, where they're in solitary confinement in a place that looks a bit like your toilet, probably. Except their toilet's not really there, they just have a hole in the ground. And he's been held there for months and months and months. And they talk about how civilized and wonderful our whole system is. I've been to most death rows in America. I've spent many, many years working on death row. And I can tell you without fear of contradiction that the conditions in Guantanamo Bay are worse than any death row I've ever been to. And this is for someone who's committed no crime, who's never going to be convicted of committing a crime, who's been cleared for release for 4 years, and they have the gall to say the conditions are okay. They're not. They're horrible. And so we remember Shaka, and we remember our obligation to him. We also remember many of the other prisoners, and I think it's very important to have their stories out there. And that's our obligation in terms of, Ahmed Belbacha, who lived down in Bournemouth for a while. And actually, John Prescott gave him a tip one time, because he was working in a hotel, and old Two Jags thought he'd done quite a good job cleaning up the room at the Labour Party conference, and so gave him a tip. We did approach Prescott to see if he would act as an ex-friend for Ahmed and get him back to Britain, but he never replied. But, we've got to remember all of these people who are left in Guantanamo Bay and who we need to get out of there. We also need to understand a bit about why folk aren't being released. With Shaka, it was originally that the US wanted to send him to Saudi Arabia, and they wanted to do that because we have the First Amendment in America. We believe in free speech, as long as it's not one of these people. And so what we wanted to do was make damn sure that we didn't send Shaka back to Britain, where he would give irritating interviews in the media about what's really going on in Guantanamo Bay. And we wanted to send him to Saudi Arabia so they could gag him. Now, that's not happened, thankfully. But now the reason that he's not being released is because of the idiotic laws that David Rifkin was just defending on the radio. He actually quoted the NDAA, and what that says is just unfathomable, that we've now passed a law that identifies 171 people and says that those people have to be held until the Secretary of Defense personally, Leon Panetta, personally signs something saying, I promise that Shaka Rana won't commit a crime in the future, and what's more, I promise that Britain's not a failing state facing revolution imminently, which probably sadly is not. But he also has to promise that that the British intelligence services will share with the Americans everything that they know about Shaka's associates. Well, I'm proud to say that I'm one of Shaka's associates, and so I take it that means the Brits have to share the wiretaps that are doubtless on my email, which my wife and I do periodically send polite messages to the intelligence services apologizing for being so boring. But, these are the rules that prevent the United States right now, in theory, from releasing folk. But as Michael said, it's It's only in theory. In practice, if they had the moral courage to do it, they could do it. And they're only going to get that moral courage if we do our job. And I'm here to say that I don't feel I have done my job for the last few years. I think there are other people who I want to recognize, frankly, right here, with reprieve, Corey and Tara and Courtney, who have been going to Guantanamo much more than I have. And they've been doing their job much better than I have, I think, until recently. And I think we need to recommit all of ourselves to doing much, much more to raise this issue and to raise the plight of these people. Because until the US politicians get enough heat from the other side, they're not going to set people free. Look, I'll tell you, Samuel Hodge was not set free because of any court of law. He was set free because of the court of public opinion. And one of my many regrets in life is Sam is free. It's really irritating. He was such a great client to have in Guantanamo. I hate to say this, Sam, but I really miss you being in prison. Sammy did so much good. And I remember telling the American military, they didn't like this, but I said, you people are truly insane. Because you won't let journalists from any country or any place in the world come in here to talk to prisoners. You won't let the BBC in, you won't let American people in. And you know the people you most hate? You hate those Al Jazeera people, and you let them have a journalist in Guantanamo who's able to interview anyone he wants and write whatever reports he wants. And I used to so enjoy coming and getting Sammy's latest set of reports and then trying to get them through the censors and so we could publish them on Al Jazeera. And it was that power that got people out of Guantanamo. It wasn't the lawyers, it was that power of the stories, the court of public opinion. Now, I don't want to be all negative, because frankly, Michael said a bit about how tough some of these things are. I don't think for me it's tough at all. I've had a few entertaining moments when they try to bang me up, but frankly, they give you some good stories, particularly when with Shaka, they tried to bang me up for supposedly smuggling underpants and Speedo swimming trunks into it. I got this letter, I thought, my goodness, this is April Fool's Day, I can't believe these people. And I wrote back to him saying, I'm going to give you some free legal advice, that if you think Shaka has got Speedo swimming trunks and you're afraid of him swimming, the only place he can swim is in his toilet. So all you have to do is put a little sign above it saying, we don't piss in your swimming pool, so please don't swim in our toilet. And that should solve the problem. By and large, our job has been a huge privilege. And I don't think for one second that it's been hard on me. It hasn't. It's been wonderful. And some of the wonderful things has been some of the people up here who I've got to meet. And I wouldn't have met Sammy. I wouldn't have met Muslim. I wouldn't have met Omar. I wouldn't have had Bisha give me free meals whenever I turn around. I wouldn't have met all these folk here, and I'm immensely grateful for that. And I view the work, as they call it, I don't think it is work, but the work they call it, of representing these people is a great privilege and a great joy. And I don't think that that is difficult in the least. And I also don't think that we should be negative about this. I remember I'll tell you a little story, when Michael and Joe Margulis and I first filed this litigation, there were all these calls, will you come on television? And, I was younger and even more stupid, and they knew better, and they said no. And so Joe's normally as much of a media whore as I am, but he said, why don't you do it, Clive? And I should have been suspicious, because I should have known something was afoot. I said, fine, I'll go do it. So I went on this television channel, and they accused me of being a traitor 13 times in 5 minutes. And indeed, I did get some fantastic messages on my answering machine that night. But back then, in February 2002, the whole world was against us. And, you're the most powerful person on earth, well, it's George Bush. All these people in Britain who think that now they're on our side, they weren't on our side then. I'll tell you, the media wouldn't do anything back then. No one would do anything positive back then. Of course, there were people in Islamic countries, perhaps, who saw what was really going on, but very, very few people in the West. And we were up against the most powerful person on earth, and he lost. He's lost. And if you took a poll today around the world, outside America, 90% of the world would be on our side on the Guantanamo issue. That is astounding. And we must never, never lose sight of that, because what that shows is what an American woman once said, which when asked if a small group of people can change the world, the response was, that's the only way it ever has happened. Well, that's actually not true. Big groups of people have too. But we can make that change, and we must never forget it. A little more difficult in America, and that's where we've got a big challenge, and we haven't won the battle there, but we will. And I guarantee you, when the history books are written, we don't say that burning witches at the stake was a great idea. I can guarantee you there's some other things the history books will say, and they won't say that Guantanamo Bay was a good idea. We're going to win this battle. It's just a matter of when. And that's defined entirely by how much we do. And what we've got to do is everyone look to themselves about their own talent and how their talent can be used to help, but also look for unlikely allies. You know, one thing I'll say, there are some police officers in the Metropolitan Police who are our allies. They are horrified by what's been going on in the torture of people, and they really want to get around prosecuting a few of these guys. Now, whether they prevail or not, we'll find out tomorrow. But in my opinion, we have some very unlikely allies in the Metropolitan Police. I never thought they'd be coming down to my house for any reason other than to arrest me. I just came from Parliament this afternoon. I came right here from there, where I was meeting with a Tory MP who wants to do something about what he views as the shocking discrimination and the shocking failure to acknowledge people like Moses Day. You know, he thinks that some of the greatest advocates for all of us in reconciliation are not your sort of middle-of-the-road, right-wing, middle-of-the-road people, but it's people like Moses, who there's a whole bunch of tabloids out there say we should lock him up, but who's someone who you know and I know and Lord Bingham knows when he met him. He said, I didn't realize there were people like you in Guantanamo. That can really make a difference. And if a Tory MP wants to reach out to Moslem, I think that's wonderful. And we've got to try and take those allies where we find them and empower them. So don't, for goodness sake, go away from tonight thinking it's all gloom and doom. It's not. We're going to win. There's no question about that we're going to win. It's just a matter of how long it takes. And that's going to be defined entirely by what you do. And if you work incredibly hard with us, I can guarantee you that you'll get into purgatory. Thank you.